Sivan.
Anger. Matmaya.
Matmaya.
Holy in me.
Holy in me.
Mam.
Mam.
In me.
In me.
Upashrita.
Upashrita.
Being fully situated.
Being fully situated.
Bahava.
Bahava.
Many.
Many.
Jnana.
Jnana.
Of knowledge. Upasa, or tapasa,
by the penance.
Bhuta, being purified.
Matbhavam,
transcendental love for me.
Agata,
attained. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. Being free from attachment, fear and anger, being fully absorbed in me and taking refuge in me, many, many persons in the past became purified by knowledge of me, and thus they all attained transcendental love for me. Srila Prabhupada's purport, as described above, it is very difficult for a person who is too materially affected to understand the personal nature of the Supreme Absolute Truth. Generally, people who are attached to the bodily conception of life are so absorbed in materialism that it is almost impossible for them to understand how the Supreme can be a person. Such materialists cannot even imagine that there is a transcendental body which is imperishable, full of knowledge, and eternally blissful. In the materialistic concept, the body is perishable, full of ignorance, and completely miserable. Therefore, people in general keep the same bodily idea in mind when they are informed of the personal form of the Lord. For such materialistic men, the form of the gigantic material manifestation is supreme. Consequently, they consider the Supreme to be impersonal. And because they are too materially absorbed, the conception of retaining the personality after liberation from matter frightens them. When they are informed that spiritual life is also individual and personal, they become afraid of becoming persons again. And so they naturally prefer a kind of merging into the impersonal void. Generally, they compare the living entities to the bubbles of the ocean, which merge into the ocean. That is the highest perfection of spiritual existence attainable without individual personality. This is a kind of fearful stage of life, devoid of perfect knowledge of spiritual existence. Furthermore, there are many persons who cannot understand spiritual existence at all. Being embarrassed by so many theories and by contradictions of various types of philosophical speculation, they become disgusted or angry and foolishly conclude that there is no supreme cause and that everything is ultimately void. Such people are in a diseased condition of life. Some people are too materially attached and therefore do not give attention to spiritual life. Some of them want to merge into the supreme spiritual cause, and some of them disbelieve in everything, being angry at all sorts of spiritual speculation out of hopelessness. This last class of men take to the shelter of some kind of intoxication, and their affective hallucinations are sometimes accepted as spiritual vision. One has to get rid of all three stages of attachment to the material world: negligence of spiritual life, fear of a spiritual personal identity, and the conception of void that arises from frustration in life. To get free from these three stages of the material concept of life, one has to take complete shelter of the Lord, guided by the bona fide spiritual master, and follow the disciplines and regulative principles of devotional life. The last stage of devotional life is called bhava, or transcendental love of Godhead. According to Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, 1.4.15-16, The Science of Devotional Service, Adal Shraddha Tata Sadhu Sango Tya Bhajna Kriya Tato Narta Nivritti Syat Tato Nishta Ruchis Tata Ata Saktis Tato Bhavas Tata Prema Vyaduchati Tata Prema Vyudanchati Sada Khanam Ayam Prema Pad Pradur Bhave Bhavet Krama. In the beginning, one must have a preliminary desire for self-realization. This will bring one to the state of trying to associate with persons who are spiritually elevated. In the next stage, one becomes initiated by an elevated spiritual master, and under his instruction, the neophyte devotee begins the process of devotional service. By execution of devotional service, under the guidance of the spiritual master, one becomes free from all material attachment, attains steadiness and self-realization, and acquires a taste for hearing about the Absolute Personality of Godhead, Sri Krishna. This taste leads one further forward to attachment for Krishna consciousness, which is matured in bhava, or the preliminary stage of transcendental love of God. Real love for God is called prema, the highest perfectional stage of life. In the prema stage, there is constant engagement in the transcendental loving service of the Lord. So by the slow process of devotional service, under the guidance of the bona fide spiritual master, one can obtain to the highest stage, being free from all material attachment, from the fearfulness of one's individual spiritual personality, and from the frustrations that result in void philosophy. Then one can ultimately attain to the abode of the Supreme Lord.
Vidarāgabhaya krodha manmaya mamupāśitya bhava jnana tapasa puta madhava agata.
Being free from attachment, fear, and anger, being fully absorbed in me and taking refuge in me, many, many persons in the past became purified by knowledge of me, and thus all attained transcendental love from me.
Namo Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasthaya Bhute Srimate Bhaktivedanta Swami Dhaname Namaste Sarasvatam Deve Gauravani Pacharane Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Paskatya De Satarna.
This chapter deals with transcendental knowledge. The last chapter, Arjuna was told by Krishna that the great enemy we have is called lust. And throughout the Bhagavad Gita, this is mentioned. Srivida narakasya dam dvaranash tamatmanaha kama krodha tatalovas tasmat etam trayam tyajet. There are three gates leading down to hell: lust, anger, and greed, that every sane person should become free from them, because they lead to the degradation of the soul, of the self. And previously, here in the third chapter, Krishna had mentioned that kama esha, krodha esha, rajaguna samudbhava. Mahashino mahapatma vidyanam ihavarina. That is, lust only, Arjuna, which is born of contact with the material mode of passion, and later on transformed into wrath, which is the all-devouring sinful enemy of this world. In other words, by the influence of lust, then what we're supposed to be doing in this world to elevate us out of the material concept of life, when we fall in this way or the influence of lust, then we, instead of becoming free from the bodily concept of life, we become more absorbed in it. And here in this verse, the different levels of bodily concept of life are explained. Previously, Krishna had said, evam bhude param bhudva samstavyatmanam atmana vidishatram mahabaho kamarupam durasadam. Knowing oneself to be transcendental to the material senses, mind, and intelligence, one should control the lower self by the higher, and thus by spiritual strength conquer this insatiable enemy known as lust. So where does that spiritual strength come from? That comes from transcendental knowledge. And by transcendental knowledge, then we understand what is the proper way of utilizing this body. That's called tapasya. So that transcendental knowledge means that if we have the knowledge, we can desire to serve that knowledge. If we don't have transcendental knowledge, then we'll have some other kind of knowledge. Knowledge we must have, but if we don't have transcendental knowledge, then automatically, according to our past karma, what we've done in the past in different bodies, certain ideas, certain conceptions of life will arise, and we'll have to choose from one of those conceptions, one of those ideas that arise. unless we're hearing from Krishna, then we must hear from our past activities, our past desires. If we don't get the bhakti lata bij, then we have to get either the karma bij, or the jnana bij, or the yoga bij. But we won't get, if we don't have the bhakti lata bij, then we can't get actually completely free from the modes of material nature. So here it says that part of the knowledge is to find out what is not knowledge. What is not knowledge is ignorance. And ignorance comes out of the sinful activities. There's an elaborate explanation, the nectar of devotion, how out of ignorance arises the desire or the seed for material enjoyment or material activities, bija. And from that desire or that seed comes actual activities, papa, or sinful activities. And from that papa, there's a reaction called prarabdha karma, which is manifested immediately. And from that prarabdha karma comes an immediate reaction, and then there's also aparabdha karma. Part of the reaction is stored away as a seed that manifests itself as kuta, or an inclination towards sinful activities in the future, and then that manifests itself as bij, as a sinful desire, which creates more sinful activities, which create more sinful reactions, which create more sinful inclinations. So this goes on perpetually. And Prabhupada gives the example of a person who is attached to illicit sex. So the desire is there, and when one acts according to that desire, then there is a sinful activity. And from that sinful activity, there may become a sinful reaction. Namely, one gets venereal disease. And even if one cures the venereal disease, still, because of the kuta or the sinful inclination, one will, that sinful desire for illicit sex will arise again within the heart, which will lead to further sinful activities in the future. Therefore, the only way of getting rid of the sinful reactions, from whether it be the desire or the activity or the inclination, is by transcendental knowledge. By destroying ignorance. So that ignorance comes from, destroying the ignorance begins with hearing, trying to hear the right thing. And then if we try to understand what the right thing is and we desire that correct activity, we desire to utilize the body in Krishna's service, known as devotional service, then the result will be that one will come to the platform of becoming Krishna conscious. Gradually, when Krishna sees our sincerity, then he says, Te sham satatam yukdana, bhajantam pritipurvakam, dadami buddhi yogam tam, yena mam upiyantite. To those who are constantly devoted to serving me with love, then I give them the understanding by which they can come to me. So Krishna was in the heart. He gives us the realization of that knowledge that we were trying to apply within our lives. He makes it realized, then it becomes easier to apply, becomes natural. But those who don't have this knowledge, they'll hear it mentions three different conceptions of life according to one's absorption in illusion. The most basic absorption due to lust or attachment is that there's nothing beyond matter. The common person, generally, even if they're a so-called religious person, conceives of everything in terms of matter, because that's their only experience they have. Therefore, they take the universe as God. The universal form of God is the supreme. They can't see anything beyond that. Even they're trying to find God, they think he's on some heavenly, on some cloud somewhere. He also has a body like us on some cloud. So such people certainly won't be interested in actual spiritual life, because it doesn't make any money. Anything that doesn't make money can't really make us happy, we think.
Therefore, even if people take a religious life nowadays, it's to go to church and pray for some material benediction. Give me a wife. Give me a wife, give me a house, give me a color TV, Om Jai Jagadish Hari. Something like that. They think that to go to church means to get some material reciprocation if there is a God with him. He'll give us a nice, healthy body, nice family, free from disease, all the money we need, nice house, vacations, all for putting a little money in the box. It's a good investment. Therefore, such people certainly neglect spiritual life because they don't know what spiritual life is. Although they think they're very spiritual, they all say they love God, but they don't even know who God is. And they never question their love for God. Although, how is it possible to love someone that you don't know anything about? But if that was mentioned to them, they become very disturbed because they think ultimately that God doesn't really exist. He's simply a conception or some force or some energy that somehow or another makes nice arrangements for people in the material world. But they don't think he's a person. And a little bit more involved in the material energy, a little more deeply absorbed, is that one may believe in something material, spiritual, but one thinks that ultimately, after you die, you merge into the impersonal Brahman. So the first class of the impersonal, the materialists, the second class of the impersonalists. The Prabhupada's prayer is Shunyavadi and Nirvishesha. So Shunyavadi means the voidist, and Nirvishesha means the impersonalists, who think that God doesn't ultimately have any form. So when they're informed that God, that there is life after this body, they think it's something like material life. Therefore, they fear having a spiritual personal identity. They think, here, we have so much problems in our relationship to others. Even we have a nice relationship at the beginning, after some time, usually the relationship becomes disturbed, and therefore we fight and we look for other relationships. So since time immemorial and every species of life, we've had relationship with different personalities, different living entities, and after some time the relationship broke and we went on to find other relationships. Therefore we think it's always disappointing to have a relationship. If it's a nice relationship, we lose it anyhow, and therefore I become sad, I become morose. And if it's a bad relationship, we suffer, and we wait till that relationship breaks. But bad relationships never seem to break, and good relationships seem to go on for a very short period of time. So one thinks that spiritual life must be no relationships, because here in the relationship is basically I'm trying to become superior to others. Others are competing to become superior to me. I pretend to be a servant while trying to become the master. Someone else tries to pretend that they're going to be my servant at the same time they're trying to become master. So it's a continuous relationship between one aspiring master who's pretending to be a servant, trying to lord it over another aspiring master who's pretending to serve. So the mentality in the material world is basically competition. And the best way of eliminating competition, one thinks, is to eliminate personality. That ultimately, we all get a chance to become the Supreme. However that works out, it's very hard to figure it out. But we all merge, and there's only one, and it's me, but me is you, and we're all one together. So it's a very democratic process. Everyone becomes God. And there's only God and nothing else. That way, there's nothing to lord over, although we're somehow or another God anyhow. But once in a while, God becomes bored and he decides to lord it over something to show himself to be God, so he manifests the material world. And then he has his Leela, and then he finds out it's not such a good thing to become God. Then he merges back into himself. He remains his Godship, but he doesn't bother trying to lord it over anyone anymore. because there's only himself to lord it over, and that's no fun anyhow. In any case, they fear a personal spiritual identity. So obviously such persons will not be interested in finding out that God is a person or he has personal activities. They think when Krishna comes, his activities are something like our activities, but a little bit more extraordinary. When Chaitanya Mahaprabhu came before the Mayavadi impersonalists in Banaras, Varanasi, when the Mayavadis, headed by Prophet Shinanda Saraswati, saw that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu had an effulgence greater than 10 million suns simultaneously, they thought he must have realized that he's Narayan. But they didn't take it very seriously because they all thought that they were Narayan. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu just had a little head start. He had realized who he actually is. But ultimately, that's what they all realized at the end. Therefore, they didn't really take him as anyone special, except Namo Narayan. He was Narayan. But that's not a big thing. So such persons will not appreciate actual devotional service, although sometimes the Mayavadis, they take the devotional service in order to merge into the Supreme. They think by worshipping the deity, gradually one day one becomes the deity, and then one can merge into the deity, and that's it. And then one eternally is whatever, the deity. Of course, they don't think the deity is very important, according to Sankaracharya. The deity is actually a manifestation of Brahma. Krishna, as when Sankaracharya says, Narayana Paro Vyaktat, that Narayan is above the material creation. What he means is that from impersonal Brahman, in order to enjoy its pastime, as in the material world, first impersonal Brahman manifests itself as Narayan. And then from Narayan, it manifests the material creation. So they believe that Narayan is above the material creation, but they don't think that the material creation is real, nor do they think that Narayan is real. They're both products of illusion, although one illusion is superior to another, but they're both illusion. So it's not a big thing to be Narayan. You get to manifest an illusory world, but ultimately you merge back into Brahman and your illusion ends. You're Narayan. Actually, you're not Narayan. You're really the impersonal Brahman. But you've forgotten, and now you think you're God. But you are God. But God is not Narayan. It's the impersonal Brahman. So if you don't understand this, it's very good. If you understand this too well, then you might be in spiritual difficulties. And then, of course, the next class of people are called the voidists. Most people nowadays are voidists. They believe when you're dead, and that's it. Charvaka Muni said, beg, borrow, steal, ghee, and eat it. Because after you die, it's all over. So it doesn't really matter what you do. No one's going to chase you into the void. You don't have to pay any bills in the void. You don't have any karma to pay once you enter into the void. You just merge into the void. So enjoy life now. Because he was advising people to eat ghee, but the voidists nowadays are a little more extreme in their activities. He understood where material enjoyment is at, while the modern day voidists, in the name of becoming happy, they're actually, even during this lifetime, they make themselves miserable. They don't achieve the void, they come back as cats and dogs. In any case, there is no void. The Buddhists, the modern day Buddhists, is close to merging into the void by merging generally into the Karna ocean or the Viraj river. They merge there. They stay there for some time and then they get bored and come back again. Just like the impersonalists. In any case, these mentalities which we've cultivated since time immemorial and which are very prominent in modern society, which we've been trained up since our birth, these mentalities of becoming attached to the material world, if we examine our lives, we'll see that we probably have one or two attachments left at least. we claim that we're not attached to anything, but how much we're attached to this body. How much we take care of the body, and with great delight feed it, and clothe it, worship it, look after it. Whatever happens to it, it becomes a great concern of us. We want it to be glorified, to be appreciated, to be comfortable, to live as long as possible. So we've quite attached to the body. What to speak of other bodies, other material conceptions. And as even if we a little out of the bodily concept of life, we're a little bewildered who I really am. After all, unless we're actually awake, we're dreaming. In this dream state, we're imagining that my spiritual life is going to be something like my material life, because we have no experience of what actual spiritual life is like. But due to our false ego, we're convinced that we actually know. We actually believe that we have, based on our material experience, spiritual life would be something like this. Otherwise, how could it? Couldn't be too much different. Therefore, we're not so enthusiastic to obtain a spiritual body, because we don't really know what it would be like. After all, being a servant eternally seems quite harsh. Here in the material world, there's at least some prospect, some hope of becoming a master one day. But there, you know, living in some little cottage forever and just sweeping some, you know, floor all day long, and peeling a few betel nuts for God as he's enjoying in the groves, which is eternally just peeling some betel nuts. And if we're not careful, they throw us back into the material world again. God never forgot we made a mistake one time, and he's always watching. I don't know, this betel nut was bad. Who chewed this betel nut? No, not again. So we think the spiritual life is going to be just like our life. You know, you have to satisfy the boss or you're in trouble. The boss is always enjoying, and you're just like, you know, serving. I'm scrubbing this floor. It's been three lifetimes of drama. Give me a break. I'd rather get a temporary material body than keep on scrubbing this floor eternally. And then we think, all right, spiritual life is just a dream. I never met anyone who had any real experience with spiritual life. Material attachment is painful. And what's the alternative? I'm going to merge and disappear. Everything I'm working for, everything I'm doing, my personality, everything I like and love, it all just disappears. So that's the ultimate frustration. I'm just wasting my time. Here I'm suffering, and the reward is I'll disappear at the end. So these are three stages we've been trained up. Sometimes we're a little attached to the material world. Sometimes we start thinking maybe there's something spiritual, and we think, oh my God, there's some spiritual planet somewhere, and be working hard for nothing. No, not even a fruit of reaction. Just working hard, no salary, the gopis don't get anything. And they just work, there's no result. Just working for the boss. You don't get anything either. Or I'm just going to merge and my whole life is just wasted. My whole existence was wasted. I'll disappear and that's it. These are three stages that prevent us from actually engaging in devotional service. So when we examine any of our attachments that go through our minds, it's usually in the first one. Usually on the superficial level, everyone's attached to so many things in my body. It's the most direct thing that we observe. And then sometimes people get a little bit more conscious of their minds and they start speculating about something they call spiritual, and it's usually just a little bit, not very much different from the material. We can see the conceptions that the so-called religious people have of angels floating around with wings, and God with no face sitting on some big chair with no, you know, just throwing people into the burning fire and giving people harps and horns to blow all the time. You know, not very attractive. It's more or less something mundane, a little bit more subtle. And then when we really think deeply, we think, oh, it's just all void. I'm going to die and that's it. They're going to bury my body. If I'm lucky, I'll come back as a ghost. Hover around my body for a while and before I disappear. But by the process of devotional service, chanting Hare Krishna, following the regular principles, we're supposed to get free from these conceptions of life. And how do we get free from the conceptions of life? First of all, by hearing what they are, recognizing them for what they are, hearing how the body's changing, we're not changing, we've never changed, it doesn't matter what happens to the body, it doesn't matter what happens to the mind, we're not changing. Our dream is constantly changing, but we're not changing. Hearing this, we get a little hope, maybe there is a spiritual life. And then we hear about what spiritual life is like, Krishna in Vrindavan playing on his flute, or in Vaikuntha, or the incarnations of Krishna coming, and how the devotees are serving these incarnations. This sounds good. The coward boys have 3 big meals of prasadam every day, so I'm not going to starve. They don't work in a factory. Seems most of the time they're playing. They get a lot of breaks. And the cows, they seem like they're nice cows that they herd, so we don't find the cows kicking the coward boys in the face or anything. So it doesn't sound like a very bad life, if that is spiritual life. And the gopis, of course, they seem to be crying a lot, so we don't quite know what that means. But they get to dance a little bit with Krishna, and it seems like there's some hope. So hearing about spiritual life, then we may become enthusiastic to perform the devotional activities. And then, of course, there are other activities that we're supposed to avoid. We're supposed to give up, or at least regulate our attachment while we're performing the devotional activities, while we're hearing about Krishna, so that gradually, by this tapasya, we can get some experience. Krishna can bestow upon us his mercy, and we can experience what spiritual life is. And in proportion to Krishna's bestowing mercy, or as much mercy as Krishna gives us, then to that extent we understand what actually we're doing, what this is all about. Otherwise it remains all very theoretical, we're not quite sure whether it's true or not. That depends upon our actual conviction, our actual determination to put into practice what we've heard, and of course our actual understanding of what we heard. It's not that we hear very much. Usually we sit there, whatever is being said, we're constantly speculating if we're awake. We don't really believe anything we hear, generally speaking, because we don't, and even if we hear something, we interpret it according to our own experience. That's our nature. And even if we can sit there for 5 minutes and we don't listen to our minds, then generally we don't listen to what's being said either. We've fallen asleep. Our minds are spaced out because we don't think the subject matter is really that important. We have so many other things to do. So many plans for my body, so many worries about the future, how I'm going to die soon, what's going to happen to my body, how am I going to die, am I going to suffer when I die? I met people on the street sometimes distributing books. One lady, she said, oh, I believe in God. You know, this is very important work of God. My main preoccupation is I'm praying to God that I don't suffer when I die. That's her main attachment to God, so God can help her so she doesn't suffer when she dies. That we don't have to die in some miserable place under miserable circumstances, and that our body is not, you know, just put it in a nice, comfortable position. We die in a comfortable place, and they honor our body and put it in a nice, comfortable place so it can rest there for some time. So these thoughts are not so foreign. We've been trained up like that. So
these crazy hallucinations that we have. But by the process of devotional service, gradually we should actually realize Krishna, and as we realize Krishna, we'll realize ourselves, and these false conceptions will go away, and we'll realize what actual spiritual life is like. So I'll stop there. Thank you. Any questions? Yes.
Maharaj, if we don't believe what you are saying, then why are we still, why are we here?
Well, we don't completely disbelieve. Because we have some experience. Maybe we like the prasadam, we like to dance in kirtan. You know, so many reasons why we may come. It's more of a nicer life, we're regulated. I'm not so disturbed as I was before. Better association. So we have some faith that it works a little bit. But as far as, you know, there's a spiritual world, Goloka Vrindavan, where there are Chintamani trees, and everyone there has a spiritual body, and they're walking, it's just like dancing, and they're talking, it's like singing. And everyone, you know, lives there forever. Krishna's playing on his flute, and everyone's in ecstasy, and they have these huge meals of prasadam every day. So, it sounds like mythology to us. Even what to speak of the spiritual world. We hear that there's planets in this world where there are trees the size 800,000 or 120,000 kilometers high, and they have fruits of mango fruits the size of elephants, and when they drop from the trees they form rivers of mango juice, and when the rivers of mango juice flow down to the milk ocean, with the combination of the milk ocean, the sun heating it from overhead, it turns into gold. So we think, oh yes, sure. So we don't even believe what's going on in this world. We, just like the gopis, they hear that Krishna is God, but they never take it seriously. Although theoretically they understand he's God, but they never really take it very seriously. Similarly, the coward boys. So similarly, we hear all the time that we're not the body. The body's changing, but we ourselves within the body, we're always the same. But we never take it very seriously. It just seems like a nice idea, but it seems real, but can't really take it too seriously. I have too many things to do here. But we come here because we have some knowledge. We have some knowledge. We have some experience that it's good. But the other things seem quite far away. Otherwise, if we stopped serving prasadam, most of us would disappear. Or other things. Anything else? Yes.
Sometimes some person has been devotee and has been practicing for God. Then he is so God. Does this mean that this person never had faith enough, or that he becomes ruled by some material desires? And how is it for analyzation?
Same thing for us. Why are we so surprised if someone leaves? How often do we stay in Krishna consciousness even while we're practicing? How long does it take before we become attached to something? Just like when we all walk out of here. How long will it take before some idea which goes through our brain or our mind, we become attached to it? And then we start wondering, who am I actually? What am I really doing here? And then we start imagining some other identity. We're actually this body, and we got to live for this body. And then we worry about what's going to happen to me in the future. Maybe we see a headline in the newspaper, some calamity happened, we wonder what's going to happen to me. So how often are we actually in Krishna consciousness? Although we put on saris and shave our heads, put on dhotis, come to the temple, but we're practicing to become devotees. So if someone, we get a Lord, and then we have to draw our minds back so our senses don't get too crazy. But sometimes someone gets attached to some idea and tries to carry it out with their senses. So if it just becomes a little bit more obvious, that's all. That they were attached.
But we're all attached. Otherwise, we wouldn't be in the bodily concept of life. How many of us are completely free from the bodily concept of life? How many of us have actually entered into our spiritual bodies and realized it? So, if we're not, that means we're attached to some conception, material conception. Sometimes it's grossly, we grossly exhibit it, and sometimes it's more subtle, that's all. Sometimes we stop chanting, and sometimes we chant, shnik, 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 ram, 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 day, 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 hey, kitty, kitty, hey, kitty, kitty. We start criticizing people who stop chanting their rounds. But the question is, when we're actually going to start chanting our rounds? Is that right? They don't change completely. You don't see what they're actually thinking about.
And they crazy
about. No, you don't see, because you see their activities, but you don't see internally what they're thinking about. Generally, it takes some time. Besides that, the devotees we sometimes think are the most exalted, the highest position, they sometimes have the greatest difficulty, because everything is based upon, first of all, humility. If you think you're exalted, you lose the humility, you forget that you're actually only 1/10,000th the size of the tip of hair in size. You start thinking that you're some exalted personality in this world. Then you're in the greatest difficulty. When you're a new bhakta and everyone's reminding you that you're just a new bhakta, and your false ego can't develop too much, or can't increase, then you have a better chance of surviving. But when you're false, people are feeding your false ego, and if you're not aware of it, you start imagining yourself to be some exalted personality. Then you can get into a lot of difficulty. Because exalted personalities need very special association, they need very special everything. They can't tolerate anything because they're exalted. So, therefore, one imagines that I can do better outside the Krishna consciousness movement. There's all kinds of weeds, profit, adoration, distinction. They all start growing in the heart. And you may not see it because they're exalted personalities. Until the weeds take over and choke the bhakti lata bija. And they show how exalted they are because they go out and do what exalted people are supposed to do. They want to expand their realm of lording it over the material nature. They're cultivating that attitude, I'm the Lord. Now they're going to display it. So then they go and get their house, their wife, and the color TV. Is that right? Anything else? Of course, sometimes you may be in the Krishna consciousness movement for some time, and you're exalted. Sometimes the devotees have the conception that I'm an exalted person, I'm a sadhu, just like in India a lot of times. People exalted, being exalted doesn't mean you have a big house or a big car or a wife or a husband, whatever. Exalted means you're the most renounced. So even that's another misconception. That I'm the most renounced, I'm the most sadhu, whatever. So there's so many different varieties of Maya and false ego that can manifest. Sometimes we can see them, and sometimes not. But that doesn't mean that Krishna doesn't see them. Anything else? I could hear it. Did you have a question?
Yeah. So Srila Prabhupada says that if someone fails in devotional service, so he should not be put off, but he should try again and again. And there are some people who are not successful always, but one seems to be very So they pay, but Prabhupada says that they should still go on. So, Agadirgati Prabhu, would like you to elaborate more on this.
Elaborate on what?
My honest.
This is just my honest meeting.
On this matter that how one should then try it again.
Well, we should try to chant our rounds better. Read Prabhupada's books, take prasadam nicely, honor prasadam, come to the programs, do some service. Just do what we're already doing, just try and do it better. Not have to do anything else. Anything else? Grantharaj Srimad Bhagavatam Bhagavad Gita Ki Jai. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Gaur Premanande
Hari.
Samaveda Bhaktivrinda Ki.